Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Well, this team is 2-1. And they're tied for first place in the AFC East. And yet, we got so much wrong going on right now. Holy cow. Wow. Welcome into the playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I am John Rook. And your cards, letters, calls, complaints, criticisms, all welcome in the playbook today. This is what we affectionately know as Nitpick Tuesday. Hashtag Nitpick Tuesday. Don't let me, I can't forget the hashtag. Kevin, you gotta remind me. Hashtag Nitpick Tuesday. Tomorrow we gotta come up with a name the hashtag for Wednesday's show because Thursday is Prediction Thursday. We discussed this a little last week. If you're just tuning in or you're new to the program, then, this is Nitpick Tuesday. Now, we all know that Patriots fans, heck, New England sports fans, probably nitpick over wins and nitpick over silly things and nitpick over things that are just not important in the overall scheme of things more than maybe any other group of fans in the entire U.S. of A. Heck, maybe even more than fans anywhere on this planet. New England fans are just, I mean, when things are going well, we still manage to find things wrong with our teams and we get mad about it. We do. We get mad about it. And I realize that, you know, even though this team is 2-1, and with Buffalo's loss this week, they are now back tied atop the AFC East, such as it is, but you can only play in the division in which you are assigned. I go back to one little adage, one little sort of cliche-ish thing that I love to say at times like this. No matter how bad you've got it, somebody else always has it worse. So all you need to do is look down I-95 at the Jets and a little further down 95 at the Dolphins right now. Holy cow. You think we got it bad. How about what the Dolphins are going through? You got players now that are publicly griping about their new defensive coordinator, Kevin Coyle, because they've been spanked now twice after they beat the Patriots in the opening week. I wrote about that a little bit in this week's View From Above column here on Patriots.com. And, of course, I also put on my three chief nitpicks for this week. If you haven't read them, I will share them with you throughout the course of the program. But, really, we'll get into where we kind of see what the problems are with this team right now. And, yes, PFW guys talked some about it in their show today. The fact of the matter is that, yeah, things are going real well, I think, right now for the defense. But they haven't played an offense yet. And they're going to face big-time offenses before this year is said and done. You got Denver on the horizon. You got Indy on the horizon. You got Detroit as a good offense. Green Bay, potentially good. You got and hey, I'm not going to rule out Kansas City for next Monday night. Playing at Arrowhead Stadium, and they finally got on track, and they licked, they beat, they spanked the same Miami team that just beat your Patriots by 13 points. They beat them by 19 this past Sunday. And they were 0-2. And so now Kansas City's got to feel like they got a little momentum started finally now. They don't want to drop to 1-3. They get back to 2-2, and they're right back in the hunt. They're right back in the mix. You know, they may not be in Denver stratosphere, but they certainly are going to be in playoff stratosphere. So this is a big game coming up next Monday night. It is a big one. We'll spend some time this week, of course, certainly talking about that. Our focus today, however, will be on what's wrong with New England. This is a team, clearly, we all thought, and that includes media, PFW guys, myself included, broadcasters. This is a team we all thought that would be a Super Bowl contender, and it may still be. Let me underscore that, okay? I'm gonna take my yellow highlighter, and I'm going to write it. I'm going to go through it several times. We may still be. It's 3 weeks into the season, and the players here at the stadium, they will tell you, we got a lot to work on, but we're not going to panic. This team has started out slowly in the past, last few years, in fact. They've started out relatively slowly. There's been a bump. There's been a loss. There's been something early that's gone on that you didn't expect. And yet, they've been in three straight AFC championship games. So, when I talk to Andy and to Paul and to Fred a couple of moments ago about knee-jerk reactions, that's really what we're doing here. And of course, that's what the whole premise of Nitpick Tuesday is about here on the program, inside the Patriots playbook. Nitpicks are knee-jerk reactions. Now, less so because we call this Nitpick Tuesday because I like to give the game another day, another 24 hours to sort of diffuse and sort of let the emotion of whatever disappointment you might have kind of wash over you and then come back to it. It's like putting it aside for a day and then revisiting it. And are you still as upset as you might have been in the aftermath of the game being over? And if you are still as upset, well, then you got a legitimate nitpick, and that's what we try to discuss here on the program on Tuesdays. Now, I'm sure there are many of you who have let the last 24 hours to 48 hours since the game has been completed here at the stadium, you've let it wash over you, and you're like, yeah, I'm still upset. Yeah, I'm still pissed off. Yeah, I still got, okay, I get that. And I can't say that I blame you. Can't say that I blame you. So what we have to do, though, is try to come up with a nitpick that is a legitimate long-term problematic scenario or section of the team with this football team that we're not certain right now we're going to be able to see improvement on, as opposed to just a knee-jerk reaction that says, oh, Tom Brady stinks, Brandon LaFell stinks, Danny Amendola stinks. You can't just say that. That's a knee-jerk reaction to the moment. We need to come up with some sort of reasoning behind our emotions in looking at the football team. And, you know, and there are a couple. And the one that stands at the top of the list, at the very top of the list, has to be the play of the offensive line. Has to be. Now, I wrote this earlier today on the website. If you haven't had a chance to read it, then bear with me for a moment. This is what I said in our View from Above column today. I said, the offensive understatement of the season so far is line play is lacking. When you can manage just 2.4 yards per rush against a defense dead last in the league in rush defense, like Oakland was, when your offensive line allows two sacks and six quarterback hits, Paul is right. Seven sacks through three games this time a year ago, seven sacks through three games now. But the hits that he's taken without going down are starting to mount. And Brady is not 36 like he was a year ago. He's 37. There is a difference. It's going to come back to haunt you. So two sacks, six QB hits. When your offensive line continues to commit penalties that wipe out potential promising drives, Cameron Fleming had one in the first quarter. Jordan Devey had one in the first drive of the third quarter. You kind of sense a pattern here. It leads to indecision because the running backs are looking for holes. It leads to inaccuracy, TB12's missing his receivers. Untimely additional mistakes elsewhere. You had penalties from LaFell and Gronk helping cut short promising drives in the second half. And an overall lack of execution. It starts with the offensive line in more ways than one. I also mentioned it seems as if the offense needs deception in order to be successful, and even that isn't working well thanks to penalties. You need deception to clear passing lanes? You need deception to create running lanes? Come on. Really? Deception? Razzle-dazzle? No. No. You need to knock the guy in front of you off his feet. You need to keep the guy at defensive end out of the offensive backfield. That's what you need to do. And then I wind up by saying, correcting these problems, starting with the line, needs to be priority one for the Patriots on offense. There's really no other. I mean, you want to complain about Amendola disappearing? You want to complain about Brandon LaFell not being all that? You want to complain about Gronk starting slowly, even though I think that's hardly a complaint here? You want to complain about Aaron Dobson not being active or Kembrell Tompkins being at? You can complain all you want, but it all completely pales in comparison to starting with the line. All of that begins to correct itself when the line begins to click. The Patriots have to know this. The players know this. Brady knows this, and he's doing a magnificent job, I think, Tom Brady is, of biting his tongue. He's always been a team guy, but you could tell it in the aftermath, right after the game was over on Sunday. When he met the media, you could just tell he wanted to say more. He can't do it. You could tell during his Patriots Monday interview. No. He's going to move on. You know, he's kind of being vague with, you know, we're leaving some chances on the field. Yeah, because he's spreading the blame around, and he's, you know, certainly taking his share of that. I also think there's something to Tom Brady not having what he's had previously. And, you know, we brought this subject up about this time a year ago, did we not, Kevin? I believe we brought this subject up about a year ago, kids, that Brady might have lost a little bit of oomph on the fastball. And we damn near got ridden out of town on a rail. You know, I'm not going to put the entire blame on Brady now, just like I didn't put the entire blame on Brady a year ago. But it is a natural progression when you turn from 36 to 37 years old that you're just not going to be quite as sharp. And when you have an offensive line that can't, you know, block, you know, that's acting more like Swiss cheese than granite, and you have doubts about your receivers, and the two guys that you're most confident in, that you have the most faith in, happen to be Julian Edelman, who's Minitron out of the field, and God bless him. But he's, you know, he's smaller than I am. He's about the size of Andy. And the other person is Rob Gronkowski, and he's still not completely up to snuff. He's still a shell of his former self, and he may never be the same player again because of the injuries he's had over the last two seasons. Those are the two guys that you have confidence in, and yet everybody else, you're trying to figure out a way, and they either can't get open or there's a myriad of problems here, gang. There's just a bunch of problems. All right, so we want you to be able to get your 2 cents worth in here. Many ways you can do that, certainly by telephone today. We've got a lot hanging on from the previous program. We'll try to get to all of you, so please be patient. 855-PATS-500. Toll-free, telephone number 855-PATS-500. And when you hear one phone call end today, that would be your cue to pick up the phone and dial if you're trying to get through and the phone line is busy. Just simply when you hear a phone caller, you know, say goodbye, that's your cue to call. All right? 855-PATS-500. If you decide you want to wait around for that and you want to do it email-wise, you can do it the old-fashioned way. Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. And then on social media, hit me up on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster. And on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name, and you have not submitted the friend request. We'll accept that, and then you can post your Patriots-related things on the webpage, or we can use the chat function during the program. John.Rook on Facebook. All right, one other question that I want to ask you before we get to your phone calls, and your emails, and your tweets, and your Facebook post today, because I know there'll be a lot of them coming in. I'll get to as many of them as I humanly possibly can. Rest assured that what I don't get to, I do read, especially in the social media variety, because those are my two personal accounts. How do you feel about the boos? Not the B-O-O-Z-E. I like it, and I do it often. No. How do you feel about the B-O-O-S that came raining down from the stands? Especially, I heard the first few of them after the opening drive of the game on Sunday. Three and out, three pass plays, nada. And then I heard a smattering of boos. And, of course, they got more vociferous later in the half. And then after the opening drive of the third quarter, that's when I really heard them. How do you feel about that? Were you here? Did you hear them on television? Did you hear them over the radio? Does this team deserve that? I mean, I know you pay your hard-earned money if you're a season ticket holder. You probably fork out a lot of dough for your favorite football team. I understand that. This is not college. These are the pros. These guys are paid to do a job. They're paid with some of the money that you feed this organization. But they're 2-1. They're tied for the division lead. They've, you know, in the past, started out slowly, and they've ended up in three straight AFC championship games. Have we built this team up to the point where anything short of the Super Bowl is abject failure? Is that right? Is that the right thing to do? And is our answer booing these guys? I'd just be curious as to your thoughts on booing a team that's 2-1, even though it may have more expectations than what we've seen after this 16-9 win over the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. All right. To the phones, first of all, Dan and Sandwich will lead it off. He's been holding the longest. Dan, thanks so much for hanging on. You're in the playbook.
Hey, thanks so much. I love your show. And listen, I had one technical point and then just a comment on what you were talking about.
Sure.
It's really a technical question. Did you notice at the end of the game, it was 4th and 14 or whatever it was, there were 4 seconds left, and we were up by, like, 7 points.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to take a safety, but he pulled back and he threw a pass out of bounds.
Yeah.
There was still time on the clock. And so, like, when he threw the pass, I watched the clock, and mm-hmm. it was, like, 2-3 seconds, and the mm-hmm. ball was out of bounds. It hadn't landed on the ground. But I wonder what the rule is. When does the clock stop? And, you know, because the Raiders would have had the ball.
Obviously.
Five-yard line.
You're absolutely right. And, yep, that was a concern. And I'm like, man, you know what? They nearly screwed this up. Two things about that. Number one, I sit 2 seats down from the clock operator. There was no way in hell that clock wasn't running out.
Right.
Okay?
Oh, yeah. All right.
You catch my drift? All right.
Oh, yeah,
and I'm not suggesting anything illegal here. All right, but I'm just saying there's no way in hell that clock wasn't running out.
And
every play, generally speaking, takes at least 5 seconds. The NFL
right.
has said even on place yeah. kicks, no matter if it's just a chip shot, you are to
right.
run 5 seconds off of
okay.
the clock.
Okay.
So I think you can look at it like that.
I was looking at him like that is a bad decision. Man. That was too risky. Just take the safety, run around the end zone, and put the knee down. And
I would like
the game.
I need to look this rule up, and
I'm
and somebody has a chance to do that here on the program. That'd be great. But I
yep.
believe the clock runs until it strikes an object.
Right. Okay.
And so that's why he lofted it high
that
in the air.
Correct.
Until it strikes something, whether it's inbounds
right.
or out of bounds, that's the clock keeps rolling.
So here's my other comment based on when I was on hold and I was listening to all the stuff.
Yeah.
I wish we would get back to the day. I mean, you remember that we won the Super Bowl with the starting tight end, Jermaine Wiggins.
Yeah. Sure.
No offense against Jermaine Wiggins. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some guys on the team that were hard hat guys and that were just in there, lunch pail guys that were just in there, and we were getting 4 yards, 5 yards. A down, and we controlled the clock that way. And sometimes, you know, we'd peter out. I mean, we scored 20 points in a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brady had a good game.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish we would get back to the basics, the fundamentals of that on-schedule offense, because the difference between this team this year and last year is our defense has gotten significantly better, and I see a lot of it resembles the earlier teams where our defense was so dominant, and our offense stayed in the game, and then we came down and won the game at the end. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So.
you know, it's I have to admit, I've really waffled back and forth. And I don't mean waffling by, you know, opinion. I've got an opinion on things, but I've really gone back and forth as to whether or not our critical nature should be appropriate here. I mean, I think what we have to do is take into consideration the very possibility, and Andy Hart talked about this in PFW a while back. I think we have to take into consideration the fact that we might have overestimated some of the talent on this team. It's not to say that they're not good players, but what I think we have to do is take a step back, separate hype from reality. And I don't think anybody has done a good enough job with that. And frankly, I don't think the players and the coaches themselves have done a good enough job of separating the hype and the expectation from the reality of the situation. And when you, and I think the biggest example I can give you of that is the Patriots deciding to let go of Logan Mankins. I believe fully that the coaching staff figured we're fine on the offensive line. We don't need Logan and we certainly don't need his salary. And so if we let him go to save some spot on the cap space so we can look toward potentially re-signing a couple of our other important pieces of the puzzle and read into that McCourty and or Revis. And I think it probably starts with those guys for next year. Then, you know, but we're going to be fine on the line. We really like our talent. And then all of a sudden for this to happen, clearly there was a misjudgment here. And it's not just us. The coaches have to lay some, coaches have to have some of the blame there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's like, to me, it's like just, like I say, getting back to basics. And I think a lot of it, I haven't been really, I mean, if you want to assign blame, that's what this is. Part of it is, I think, McDaniels, you know, like, he's the one that's making the play calls. when it's third and four, and you're trying to throw a 20-yard pass, and you get a drive staller. That drives me crazy.
That was my number
one ball.
That was my number one nitpick this week, my man. My number one nitpick. Just thinking out loud here, but is it possible someone didn't see that the Raiders were last in the NFL in rush defense coming into the game? That was my opening question today. I mean, I mean, really? And then the opening drive, three straight comes incompletions. Yeah. I mean, really?
It's like, what are you trying to do? Like, just line up and play football. If you get 4 yards in a play, that's a successful offensive play.
Especially for a team that went heavy the week previous against Minnesota to establish the physicality of the game. And they did a good job with it. I'll give them credit. And then to completely just throw that out and go with something else.
Yeah.
That started the whole day on a downward spiral. And yes, Josh McDaniels has to be held accountable for that. That was absolute unequivocal nonsense.
And I hope he's not the heir apparent, because I know Bill's not going to be doing this forever, but I don't want to have this era of Josh McDaniels, because I don't have confidence in him. He didn't do well in Denver. He's, you know, been the offensive coordinator, but he hasn't really, I mean, I think he was big with getting Amendola there, and Amendola has turned out to be a dud.
Well, and I'm not going to lay all the blame on Danny Amendola's feet, though. I'm just not. I think a lot of it has to do with the position that he really should be playing, which is really more of a slot receiver, and that's been Julian Edelman's, you know, thing right now, as opposed to, you know, also, you know, Brady, you know, having his favorites out there. You know, and he did try to get Amendola involved again this week, and what happened? They ran a pick play.
Another pick play.
Another pick play, and it got called. I mean, so now I'm led to believe that the only way Amendola can get open is for us to run an illegal pick?
Exactly. You read my mind. That's exactly what I was
thinking. I'm pulling my hair out there with you, Dan. I really am. I am.
All right.
Hey, thanks. Right,
well,
thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for taking the time today to give us a call. All right, number two up on the board here is Dave in Connecticut. Hey, Dave, you're in the playbook.
How are you doing, buddy?
Good.
You know, you talked about Logan Mankins, and there's another aspect that really has me pulling my hair out. You know, we have a weapon in Mankins. You know, he was a pro guard. You know, guards are hard to come by in the NFL. I agree with that. You know, offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You created him for this tight end who Belichick liked in the draft, but Tampa drafted him. and we're not using this kid. The kid had five plays, okay, in this game against the Raiders.
Okay.
Five plays.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, we were the first team to come out with, this, you know, the two tight end set, you know, to really bring it to the forefront. And when we had, you know, healthy Gronk and Hernandez. And it just, you know, took the NFL by storm, and everyone was like, oh, my God, ooh, this is a, you know, it was like someone invented Coca-Cola all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just, you know, and it really worked. Now, you know, I understand they thought they were fine with the offensive line, okay, and but Logan was a commodity, and they, I don't know how many tight ends they brought in since Hernandez fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least eight to my count, and none of them worked out. So they were going to get this kid right, and they're not using him.
Okay.
You know, it's mind-boggling to me. You know, Gronkowski's not healthy, or fully healthy, let's put this way, fully healthy at this point. I'm not saying this kid the next Gronkowski. You know, I think he's more in the Hernandez role. You know, he might not be the blocker, you know, the Gronk is. I mean, and I think that's why they're using Fleming as a tight end as well. You know, three tight end set. You know, the play calling is really something that, you know, Josh McDaniels, you're pulling your hair out last year with it. You know, you really were.
Yeah. Well, I think the hope here was that you'd have a better understanding of your personnel. And again, this is where some of the blame has to fall to the coaches, as I mentioned earlier, with them overestimating what they had on the offensive line and feeling comfortable enough in letting a guy like Logan Mankins go off to Tampa Bay. I think clearly they've underestimated what they have overall on offense. And so they're just saying, all right, this is what we would do if, you know, we had everybody up to snuff. And they don't have everybody up to snuff. They don't have the guys that can perform at the level that they are expecting them to perform. And so they're calling plays for an offense that isn't ready to be a primetime player. So you're going to have to, for lack of a better phrase, dumb it down. You're going to have to. And that doesn't mean these guys aren't getting the playbook. What this means is these guys are not performing what you're asking them to perform. So it's up to you, right, as a coach to game plan to suit the talents that you know you unequivocally can identify that these guys have. And I don't think that they did that this last week. They certainly didn't. They came out blowing and going, running and gunning. That's not what this team is. Maybe they tried to do it to, you know, see if they could kickstart something, but it was a poor choice. This is a team that is going to need to build some momentum, and you got to start somewhere. And they had just come off of a week. This is a momentum offense. They just came off of a week in which they learned how to run the football with some sense of authority. And so why all of a sudden you're going to pull the plug on that? Against a defense that statistically was very poor. Now, let me throw in something else. And I'm playing devil's advocate with myself and everybody else here, because I can understand to an extent why Josh might have made the play calls he did, because, hey, let's give Oakland some credit here too. They might have made some adjustments. All right. They are an NFL team, and they do have some talented people over there, regardless of all the pot shots that people and fans like to throw at them. But they can also make adjustments, and probably needed and probably saw that, you know what, the Patriots are going to attack us here. We got to do this, this, and this. Hey, the Patriots made the adjustments in the run defense. It's worked. It's worked to the point now where the Patriots are one of the top run defenses in the entire NFL through 3 weeks. And that's even with the bad performance against Miami in week one. So adjustments are made. I'm guessing maybe that Josh was just trying to outthink the adjustments that they expected Oakland to come up with. And he, I believe, in my opinion, outthought himself on this one. Make any sense to you?
I really think, you know, offensively, his game plans are just, so you can go to the goal line situation. Okay. First of all, I love Marine. Is your third down back, your out of the backfield, catch the ball specialist. Ridley is your pounder. Okay, Ridley is a better goal line running back.
Okay.
Rooks. Okay. Why are you giving the ball to Vereen on the goal line? Okay, there was a, I think it was a, either a second or third, but a second down where he looked like he just ran it right into the ground.
I believe that I believe that they feel that, that Shane Vereen is almost as capable as Stephen Ridley. Now, we don't know why Ridley came off the field. Maybe it was an equipment issue. Maybe it was a health issue. Maybe he took a ding. Who knows? We don't really know what the specific instance will be. But they do believe that Vereen and Ridley are somewhat interchangeable. So that's been established for a couple of years now. But Vereen is more of a third down reception kind of guy, largely in the mold of what Kevin Faulk used to be. And you know what? When Faulk was in that running back, they didn't hesitate to stick him in there either, did they? So that's really kind of going along the lines of what the Patriots have done, you know, for years, you know, with their personnel and their groupings.
Yeah, to a certain point, but Josh, to me, McDaniels, you know, he's just, I just don't like him as the offensive coordinator.
Well, I can understand, I can understand your frustration, Dave, and I'm going to cut you loose because your phone's starting to drop here, so I appreciate your phone call. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, this is what you have, okay? You may not like him, you may not have liked him a year ago. Today is the day to gripe with your nitpicks, and that's fine. You want to jump on the "I hate Josh McDaniels" bandwagon? That's what this venue's for. That's fine. But now we have to come up with something constructive. Now we got to take another step forward and say, "All right, so how best can this problem be fixed?" I don't think that Josh is going to purposely do anything to consciously harm the Patriots' chances of winning the game, okay? He's not anti-Patriot. He knows and understands who pays his paycheck. You may not like his style. I think that sometimes he's way out of there, and I think he overthinks himself. I think that's really his biggest problem. I think he just flat out thinks too much. And I think sometimes in this game, you have to let the game clearly come to you. And I think we've seen that this team, because of the fragility of the offensive line and of some of those receivers and of Gronk physically and maybe even of Tom Brady's psyche, I think this is a team that is going to have to begin to make strides by building slow, steady momentum. And I just don't think that you can do that by coming out firing the ball and winging it like you used to 2, 3, 5, 7 years ago. I just don't think you can do that. This is not the same team. This is not the same personnel. This is a team that needs to build up some steam. This is a team that's going to need to pick up a head of steam. And then once you get things rolling, then you can be more versatile. Steve and Colleen, you're up next in the playbook. Hey, Steve.
Hey, afternoon, John.
How's it going?
I'm going to stop my oxymoron and then roll through a few nitpicks real quick.
Go.
What an abysmal win.
Yeah.
If there's such a thing as an abysmal win, this one was it.
That's true.
I'm glad that we're 2-1, but, you know, Josh McDaniels aside, execution doesn't really... Execution of the plan is the key. It's like Tyson says, everybody can have a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't really matter what Josh draws up. They didn't execute. That would be one of my first nits. The other one was, of course, the third down situation of thirds and forevers, coupled with penalties. And the defense, while they have improved, on the other side of the ball, our opponents have rushed 4 and gotten to our quarterback. And the shot that Brady took from Tuck looked like he had said something to Tuck about his mom before the game. He got punched in the mouth on that one.
Yeah, he did. He got hit hard. He did.
I wasn't sure he was going to come back after that. So
that was a big blow, and that's one that probably should be shown over and over again in the film room this week for the offensive line.
I'm hoping so. The other part is kind of the milk carton receivers that are out there in the form of Amendola, Dobson, Topkins, and the others. And the frustration, and the PFW guys brought this up, you know, David Gibbons was a name that you kind of went, yeah, okay, he's good. Not a lot of productivity as far as reps, but big plays when it mattered. that was his claim to fame. You know, it's third and forever. Gibbons comes in, you get the conversion, he's out, and you keep on going. We don't have a guy like that. I mean, other than Danny Edelman, which in effect kind of proves how bad the leaders are.
Mm-hmm.
When you know we're going to go to Gronk and Edelman, and you still can't stop that. You know, kudos to the Pats for that, as far as that goes. Offensive line, you've already, you know, riffed on that, John.
Yeah.
It's been a concern since the loss of Makins and even before.
Well, it was definitely a concern, Steve, before. Like I explained earlier, I really believe this coaching staff overestimated how set they were, because they're not performing. And I don't know what they see in Jordan Devey, but, God bless him. He's an undrafted rookie, but I don't see it. You know, maybe this is a guy that needs a little bit more of a learning curve before they throw him out there again. And I'll be stunned if this team doesn't make a major shift before playing in Kansas City next week. And this is a hell of a place. Arrowhead Stadium, the loudest in the NFL, and that's been documented.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they're going to indoctrinate a new center, and I think Brian Stork's going to move in, and I think he should move in. There's nothing like throwing this kid in the fire. I think he's ready. He's played in plenty of big games. You got to remember, this is a big-time kid who's played a lot of games at a place, you know, in Tallahassee known as Florida State. So I don't think he'll shy away from the challenge at all. I think he's ready. I think he needs to move in, and I think his presence there at center makes the overall offensive line better.
Absolutely, John. But I'd love to see them do. And what really surprised me about this game, given what happened with the Vikings, was I would like to see them do no huddle that first series. Establish the run and keep defense off balance out of the gate. As opposed to, let's throw three passes, pack it up, come back on another series, throw three passes and pack it up, and basically give the first quarter possession time to the Raiders.
Yeah, that was all. That's another reason. That was another thing that was part of the, you know, the nitpicking of the play calling. I mean, you go three and out right there, and then you already lost the battle for time of possession, and you're just handing Oakland an opportunity. You're begging the Raiders to take the game from you. And if the Raiders were any better of a football team from top to bottom, they would have.
And the scary thing was, this team made Carr look elite. That was a problem I had. I'm like, this is a rookie quarterback. He's got all day in the pocket. He's rolling out. He's making great decisions. And in the thirds and longs that the Raiders had that they converted, they were crisp, John. He was on point in getting those. He made quick decisions, and they got the ball downfield.
Yeah.
And made our defense, even with Revis, look like we really weren't where we needed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very impressed with Derek Carr. I actually thought he did a pretty doggone good job. And even though the Patriots defensively, you know, kept somebody out of the end zone again for an entire game, it's now seven straight quarters for the defense since they gave up a touchdown. You know, frankly, I don't have a whole lot of overall complaints, but I thought Derek Carr stood in there. He only took a couple of hits. I was somewhat incredulous that they were throwing the way of Darrell Revis as much as they did, and he actually did that with some success until Rod Streeter hurt his foot.
Yeah, that's the part that really surprised me as well, the fact that he was fearless in taking that matchup, and they won it consistently was...
Listen,
scratching my head.
This is where you have to just kind of pat the other guys on the back and say, you know what, that's a good job out of you. Maybe Oakland's not quite as bad or pathetic as a lot of people gave them credit for. And you know, they're 0-3, and now they're off in London, England, and, you know, that ought to be some battle between them and Miami this week. To me, I'm going to watch. I will watch that this week because Miami is in a complete and total amount of disarray, while Oakland now is building heavy momentum on their side. I wouldn't be shocked at all if the Raiders pop the Dolphins this week, and they have no business doing that. No business.
I wouldn't be either, just given the composure that Carr had against the Pats and the fact that Miami is Miami.
Yep.
I mean, there's no other way to put it, John.
Right, exactly.
But for me, it's the whole thing of execution and progression.
Yep. Yep.
And unfortunately, I know we're only three games in. I just haven't seen it. We don't really have anything to sink our teeth into. So while I live in Texas, I got to move to Missouri for a moment and go, they got to show me, John.
I got you.
Show me.
I got you. Good stuff, Steve. Thank you.
All right. Take care, John.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming, brother.
Wow. You're the man. You are the man. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Let's go to, is it Noel in Denver? Hello, Noel?
Yeah. Hi, guys. How are you? Hi, John. How are you? Good show.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm from Worcester County originally, but I've been in Denver here since 2001.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad you checked back in with us.
Yeah, well, I really enjoy your show a lot.
Thank you.
I don't get to hear it enough. I love your take on Carr because half my wife's family graduated from Fresno State, so I've seen him play a lot. The kid is really, really good. And he never had an offensive line with Fresno State, and he still did good.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of fearlessness in him, and I think that's great to have when you're young and you got a point to prove and play with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the way Brady was when he started out here about 12 years ago.
That was exactly going to be my comment. It's just a matter of if this was Andrew Luck or Kaepernick or somebody, everybody go, oh, yeah, well, this kid is going to be a good quarterback, I think. But I think the Patriots are going to be fine. I really do. I think, and I'd like to have you comment on a couple of things.
Okay.
Josh, I've never been in love with Josh McDaniels, especially living here in Denver and seeing what he did here up close and personal. I've never really cared for his attitude nor what he does with the football teams, but I guess Bill likes him. The other thing is I don't know why Bolden is still around. And don't you think that Dante has a little bit of an impact in the state of Bill's spill about what's going on with the offensive line before they got rid of Mankins?
All right, well, let's take each one of those. Number one, I think it's pretty clear that Bill likes Josh. That's been well established. Bill has plenty of confidence in Josh. He allows Josh, you know, to basically, you know, take over the play calling. I think it's time for the head coach to step in, and if it hasn't already been done, and to say, look, we really need to figure out a way to build some momentum here and play to whatever strength we have. And if you've got problems blocking in the offensive line, then maybe you need to go back to the type of offense that you were successful with a few years ago. And let's dink it and dunk it. Let's do the three-step drops and let's fire the ball out. And, you know, because Edelman, like Welker before him, Edelman's unguardable. Okay. He's becoming unguardable, just like Wes Welker used to be here. And so that's the role that he's in. And let's ride that horse as long as we can, knowing full well that hopefully, that he survives it physically, that you have other people you can go to in that role, and you can start with Danny Amendola. So that's what I think you should do. You know, and then hopefully you can use the pass to kind of open up some running lanes and you can go back to the run. When the Patriots struggled to run before, they used the pass to set up the run, even though that's the antithesis of what normal football teams, I think, try to do. And I see no reason why you wouldn't want to do that. Let's hurry it up. Let's play up tempo. You know, you can control the clock still by playing no huddle offense, but let's up tempo it. Let's dink and dunk. Let's work your way down the field. Let's have some, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 play drives. And by the way, the one touchdown drive this last week was a 15 play drive and the longest of the season thus far. It worked. So let's get back to that. Let's do more of that. And I think that's the one thing that Bill has to step in and tell Josh, look, dude, this way or I'm going to take it over. Let's see if he does that. Let's see if he does that. Number two, about Brandon Bolden. I don't have any explanation for that. He looked great, you know, going up against his own teammates in preseason, in practices and even in the exhibition season when he was going up against other teams, second and third teamers. I don't see the same authority with which he hit the hole then now. So I'm about ready to, I'm kind of there with you on Bolden. I'm kind of like, all right, next, you know, let's give James White, let's give somebody else a shot here. And what was your third one?
The third one was Dante's impact with Bill still on the offensive line.
Well, I think in all due respect to Dave DeGuglielmo, who's the new offensive line coach, and with all due respect to Dante Scarnecchia as well, you know, he wanted to retire a couple of years ago, and the Patriots talked him out of it. So I think, you know, now that he's finally decided enough's enough, they're trying to respect his wishes and his privacy. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, someone might not pick up the phone and say, hey, Scar, what do you think? That might have happened. But I also think they're trying to give, Googs an opportunity to own the job himself. And I think this is, again, where Bill has to step in as the head honcho and say, all right, I got to make the offensive line my pet project. And we've got to make some moves here. And, you know, it's kind of like, you remember the movie, Remember the Titans? And when coach steps in there during the championship game and he says, Herman, you know, that coach is kicking my ass. I could sure use some help. Well, that's exactly what has to happen here. That's exactly what has to happen here. You need to swallow your pride. You need to say, okay, what I'm doing isn't working. Give me some help, please. And I think somebody has to recognize that on both sides.
Yeah, one last thing, and I'll let you go, John, is the fact that I've been a Pat fan since 1960. I lived in California for many years before I moved to Colorado. But the point being is we've had a target on our back for a long, long time. And you know what? These teams come in, and they play us like they play a Super Bowl. And I don't think a lot of the fans look at it that way. I think, you know, when you're 2-1, and you've got the talent on defense you got. I love the way this defense looks because that's how we won Super Bowls before. And I love what you said about the dink and dunk. I think we need to do more of that.
I think that might be the antidote, at least now. It doesn't mean it has to be that way for the long haul, no. I think now is the way that you kind of, you know, work yourselves out of this little bit of a, you know, conundrum that you're having.
Hey, we got guys coming off of injuries. We got guys trying to learn a playbook that Ocho Cinco and other receivers haven't been able to learn.
We talked a little about that last week. You're 110% correct.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show, and I listen to you as much as I can.
Thanks, Noel. Appreciate that. Thank you. Noel in Denver. Up to the top of the rank here. And Gary in Hamilton, Ohio. You're up next here in the playbook. Hey, Gary.
Hey, John. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. You know, I've just seen some late guy, the last caller there was Brandon Bolden. I've seen us do a couple runs this week that was just like, why wasn't Ridley in there? You know, on the goal line, trying to punch it in with Vereen. I mean, why wasn't Ridley in there?
Great question. And again, as I suggested, a couple of things could have been in play here. Number one, they do like to rotate. Number two, I do believe that the coaching staff feels like both players are interchangeable. And number three, sometimes it's kind of like, all right, it didn't go so well the last time. Let's put somebody in there and see if it improves. So it could have been a little bit of all of that, and it could have been none of that.
I've been listening for the past couple of weeks to y'all shows pretty a lot more than I used to, and I'm just hearing so much complaining, though. And I think, you know, if you look around the NFL right now, a lot of teams are – there's not a lot of good teams right now. I mean, it seems like everybody's struggling.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be just fine. I think that we just be patient and just let this team get on a roll.
That's one way that you can look at it, and I would tend to agree with you. I think that right now, based on what I saw on Sunday, that you still have to put Seattle and Denver up at the top of the list, and I think, you know, Cincinnati has certainly worked itself into a position where you consider them probably one of the better teams in the league because they are 3-0. So let's not dismiss that. I think Philadelphia 3-0 is a little bit of a fake 3-0, but again, we saw the Eagles. We didn't see everything about the Eagles in the preseason because no one shows everything they've got in the preseason.
Well, I live here in Cincinnati, and I'll tell you this, not even people in Cincinnati believe in Cincinnati. I'll tell you that.
Well, look, I got to tell you, the best thing I like about the Bengals is, and this may not be a popular opinion with Bengals fans, I like the guts that Andy Dalton shows me. And you know, he's got flaws as a quarterback. I don't think there's any question. But I think the guy has some moxie about him that, frankly, is really – you can't coach. It's really hard to come by with a lot of QBs. He's not afraid to shoulder the burden. And when he went out on that on the trick play last week where he caught the touchdown pass and he nearly got his clock cleaned and his head removed on that play, and he still dove for the ball, and he still dove for the end zone. I got to tell you, that showed me everything you need to know. And I guarantee you, there are other teams in the league that would love to have Andy Dalton.
Oh, I agree. I was sitting there in this little sports lounge, and I was watching the Patriots game on one shit TV, and right beside me, and I've seen that play, and then I'm looking over there at Brady and him, and they can't even hit a target.
Well, you look, and we will spend a lot of time, I'm sure, talking about the Bengals and Dalton before they come and play here in a couple of weeks. And it's going to be exciting, and they are going to be a mouthful for the Patriots to have to handle in a couple of weeks because they are building up what is known as momentum.
And this week's going to be a hard one, too.
Yeah, it'll definitely be hard. There's no question. And every game is hard, and that's the beauty of the NFL. One thing that you don't want to see, and thank you for the phone call, Gary. I appreciate your taking the time to test us out today. The one thing that you have to be cognizant of here is that this is a game of momentum and that everybody is good. And so you have to seize the opportunity for momentum whenever you can. And I don't think the Patriots are doing that. You got to start from somewhere, and they really haven't grabbed onto anything yet, and they haven't ridden it for a while. And that's one of my other nitpicks that I never really got a chance to write about or talk about today, but they're not recognizing who they are. Where's Dennis Green when you need him, Kev? They are who they thought they were, or whatever. What was that? What was the quote? You still have that in there, don't you? Where is it? He's looking for it.
The Bears are what we thought they were. They're what we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like it's bull? We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Love that. That's one of my favorite rants. That goes right up there with playoffs.
And we let them off the hook.
We let them off the hook. The Patriots are not yet.
Playoffs?
Thank you.
Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yeah, two good rants. Two all-time rants amongst National Football League coaches. All right, back to the phones. Jason in Georgia. Jason, welcome into the playbook.
Hey, I'm calling in, man. I was so pissed during the game. It was funny because I was watching it, then I had to go somewhere, and I had my phone hitting me with updates, and the Patriots are at the 2-yard line, and the drive stopped, and we have a field goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the entire issues just boil down to the offensive line, and the offensive line hit like the perfect storm of weirdness where Dante Starnecchia left, and then your best offensive lineman and your toughest offensive lineman left also. So you have a Jag playing both guards now, and now you really need is Stork to come in and solidify the center spot.
I hope that that's the case. I think that that's the first place that they'll look to potentially improve things, because this was a guy that, had he not been hurt in the preseason, I fully expected him to come in win the center job and win the center job, and he didn't because the early injury set him back. But now is the time, I think, you know, he's able to play. He came in and tried to solidify things late in the game on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I think now's the time, brother. Let's see what this kid has got. You brought him in here for a reason, so let's go.
Yeah, because I think we have at least four decent wide receivers on the team. We have Edelman is obviously one, Gronkowski, Tim Wright, if he learns the playbook, looks like he can actually play on the team, and then Dobson, if he can, you know, get his leg together. And what other team has more than four good receivers on their team? Like, Peyton Manning only has Thomas's.
I think some people are upset about Brady not recognizing targets or having favorites and playing favorites out there.
He has the time. You have three-step drops. You have to get the ball out.
I think you're right, Jason. I think you're 100. You are 100. Yes, you're 110% correct. And so when you only have. You know, X number of seconds before you're going to take a big hit, you're going to go to your binky. And that's Julian Edelman.
Do I throw to Danny Amendola, who might not catch it, or do I throw to Edelman, who can catch it and then get 11 yards on the run?
Well, the problem with Amendola right now is they're playing him out. And I realize that he's probably more of an outside receiver, even though in the Patriots scheme, he's probably better suited as an inside guy. But are you going to take Edelman out? You know, to put in Amendola? I don't think you want to do that. Now, you might have to spell him every now and then, but, you know, will the play call allow the ball to get to him? I mean, they've got to figure out a better way to get Amendola, in my opinion, involved.
They've tried to do that, and they've run illegal pick plays.
What's that?
Offensive line by week four so I can understand where the team is going, because right now it's a roller coaster,
yeah,
and I'm not sure if we're going high or we're going to go off the tracks in a minute.
That's true. I hope, you know, in week four that at least take a positive step, because, you know, I thought they took a positive step against Minnesota, and then they just took a big, huge step backwards this past week against Oakland.
Oh, and for people going on Darrelle Revis and saying that he's living off his legacy or something like that, like, what was it, in Miami, he gave up 22 yards and a touchdown. He did get burned for almost a touchdown, but he did deflect that touchdown pass into the guy's lap, and the guy made a good play and caught it.
So are you complaining about Revis, or are you...
No, I think we have to give him time.
Oh, like, I agree.
What happened when Akeem Talib came back? No, the first year we had Akeem Talib, he played so-so. He was good sometimes, but he was bad sometimes. But then the second year, when everyone was together before the defense went out,
yeah,
we looked awesome because we had contusion. We had people working together. We knew how people work, and This is a new defense, and another guy coming back by week five.
There were expectations placed on Revis's shoulders based on what they saw last year in Tampa coming off of the ACL injury 2 years ago, and I think there was a natural assumption that that learning curve would be completed, and it's not yet.
No, it's not. You can't just throw – have we not learned anything from New England? Like, we can't just throw people in. We have to get them acclimated to what we do.
We're right on the same page here, Jason. The only thing I can tell you is that, you know, we probably need to exercise a little bit more patience here, and hopefully it doesn't come back to burn them, because you're not yet at the teeth of your schedule. You want to be, you know, firing in all cylinders when you get to the meaty part, and the meaty part's coming up in, it will start with Cincinnati in a couple of weeks, but the meaty part isn't going to happen for probably another month or so.
Yeah, I'm not gonna hold the team to anything. If they lose to Kansas City, I wouldn't be surprised or shocked. Or if they won, I wouldn't be surprised or shocked.
Well, I
this roller coaster right now.
Before the season started, I pegged this game as a loss.
Really?
I did.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, no, I don't know. I don't think much of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, I think they were maybe a little bit overrated to start, and they got back into shape this last week, and they pounded Miami. So, you know, now all bets are off. I think, you know, Kansas City's probably feeling a lot better about themselves today. If they were 0-3, that's why I was kind of pulling for Miami in that game, even though, you know, the Patriots still would have been quote-unquote tied with them in the division. I'm kind of looking at this thing week to week, and the whole division race and playoff thing is going to take care of itself in the long run. I was looking at individually, I'd love for, you know, Kansas City to be down in an 0-3 mess and people taking swipes at each other and maybe in some disarray, because I thought that would probably be the Patriots' best opportunity to get a win in KC. Now I'm not so sure.
You know, one of the main problems the Patriots have, really, is that they're in the AFC East. We have three teams that might look good for one game and then bad for seven. I mean, look at the Oakland Raiders. Like, I know they have fumble issues like last game, and they nearly beat us this game, but look at their rookie quarterback. They have that's not one of the top two rookie quarterbacks playing in the game today. I don't know who is. I really don't.
Yeah. Well, you can't do anything about playing in the AFC East. That's where you are. So that's the way it is. You got to worry about yourself.
Because, like, the better the division is, the better you get up.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. But I don't think the AFC East is lousy. I think the AFC East is more even than people gave it credit for.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for letting me call in.
You got it, Jason. Thanks for taking the time today. Let's go to Patrick in Brooklyn, New York. Patrick, you're in the playbook.
John, hi. It's been a while since I've called in, but I got a couple of issues I want to bring up, and maybe a couple of these things have been slightly addressed. But if you looked at the draft that New England had this year, and I believe they were saying that the draft was heavy in receiver, maybe heavy in running backs, I think possibly heavy in DBs also. Strangely enough, New England, who tends to go the opposite way of whatever's trending, they elected to go offensive line. So they brought in Stork, they brought in Fleming, they brought in a guy from Florida that may have been cut, he may be in the practice squad now, and they may have brought in a fourth lineman. I say that to say, because of Brady's lack of mobility, which you often talk about, and you and I are on the same page, we're both big fans of Brady, but we also know that in this new NFL, his lack of mobility is a reason for concern. And to me, the offensive line is probably the most critical aspect of the team after quarterback because of Brady's lack of mobility. Until the line gets fixed, we are going to continue to struggle. Now, they jettisoned Logan Mankins over to Tampa, and there may have been a couple of reasons. Obviously, salary is always a little bit behind everything with Belichick, but I think the other reason, too, is that Bill looked at Logan Mankins and felt like he was slipping, and he probably wanted to do what he always does, which is to stay a year ahead of the curve. I kind of felt, you know, based on what I had seen, that maybe he shouldn't do that. He shouldn't have done that. And it's almost kind of proven itself out that it wasn't really the best move because the line, I think, is kind of in shambles. The other point I want to bring up is the receivers. You know, we went out and we got this guy Aaron Dobson in the second round, early second round. Oh, you could almost call him a late first round pick because he was really picked early in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the guy can't stay healthy. I think it was Herm Edwards that recently said the best ability is availability. So I'm beginning to have my doubts about him. And then when I look at some of the other receivers, maybe like the guy Jeffries from Chicago, I'm just wondering if we may have missed on this particular receiver. And then my last issue is Brandon Bolden. I think he has ability. The problem is that when they bring him in, it seems like the defense is always so ready for whatever they have him do, which is normally a run, that they stop cold. So if they want to see what he can do, they may have to bring him in maybe on first down, leave him in for a couple of downs just to get a feel for the game. But I think he's got ability. But unfortunately, every time he's come out there, he's looked bad, and the fans have really not been happy with it. I'd like to hear what you think, John.
Well, as far as Bolden's concerned, I actually think it's the opposite. See, they feel like Bolden's job is to get the tough yards in the middle, and I think they felt that's one of the reasons why they never went after seriously about trying to re-sign LeGarrette Blount from a year ago, because they felt like they had a cheaper version of that with the same type of ability in Bolden. So if Bolden can't get you the tough yards when the spot or the crack in the line isn't there, he's really not serving you any purpose.
Believe it or not, I don't think that that's his strength. I think that if that's what they were thinking, they should have hung on to LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount's measurable.
They're not going to spend the money on it, Patrick.
You're not thinking
about who these Patriots are.
Yeah, it's value.
It's all about value.
You're right.
And they don't want Brandon Bolden to be the every down back. They didn't keep him on the roster to be the every down back. If they did, then you would have seen them get rid of Stephen Ridley. They didn't do that. And they probably would have brought James White in, and they would have let Bolden take over until a guy like White was ready to go. Bolden's job is to get tough between the tackle yards.
Right.
That's his job, and he's not doing
it. John, I think you summed that up correctly. Now, John, I did mention offensive line is my first issue.
Okay.
Now, I'll tell you what's really gone wrong on the line. Besides me mentioning the way they drafted, again, New England went for offensive linemen in this draft very heavily. But the guy who I felt would be a stud this year, who has really disappointed me, and I think he's a big reason for some of the problems, is Nate Solder has been outplayed every week.
You're right.
And I mean every week, and he has regressed. If you looked at him in his rookie year, he's better then than he is now.
You know why he's regressed?
Why don't you tell me?
I really believe that he's regressed because, frankly, I think he depended on Logan Mankins quite a bit for help right next to him. And without Mankins there. Now, I would also allow that I think some of the regression we've seen started before Mankins was gone. But I'm not, you know, sometimes this just happens with offensive linemen. Sometimes for whatever reason, you know, the defensive players get a little bit quicker, and when you are, and you had a change in the offensive line philosophy, and make no mistake about it, there is a change in philosophy on the line when, you know, Dante Scarnecchia leaves and you bring in a new coach, guy's going to teach you the fundamentals differently. And so he's trying to adapt what a new coach is teaching him, and it has set him back.
Right, and I'll tell you, John, if you look at how he's getting beat, it's pretty much the same way every time. It's not guys overpowering him. What's happening is they have decided that the book on him is to put those quick those quick guys like a Von Miller or the guy that Dallas used to have. Those type of guys seem to be the guys that are giving him a lot of trouble.
Yeah, the guys that are quick, the Cameron Wakes of the world. Yeah, the DeMarcus Wares. Absolutely. Those are the guys, and that's going to continue to be a problem. And they've had a problem on the other side of the line, too, with Vollmer. So, that's the problem. It's been a total and complete breakdown.
Their two offensive tackles have been dreadful.
They have been. And the guard unsettlement, the unsettlement amongst the guards and the center, it's been a complete cluster bleep.
So if you said to me, John, hey, tell me the main reason New England may not be a team at the end, I don't think that they'll ever get this offensive line fixed to where Brady can sit back there and do what he's got to do. And I'm not saying he's a guy that needs a lot of time. He doesn't.
Well, but
so
Dave,
this goes to show you how bad the line is.
That may be. But, Dave, this is where this team and this franchise has rebounded in past years. When they've had early season difficulties and problems, they've figured out a way to fix it. And that was my whole point when I opened up the show today talking about knee-jerk reactions.
Yeah.
You know, there are legitimate, you know, nitpicks here. But what we don't want to fall into is a knee-jerk, oh, these guys suck, they're never going to be any good reaction. Because if we can avoid the knee-jerk reaction, step back for a moment and give these guys a chance to fix the problem, you may find that there is a way to fix this. And I suggest, at least initially, let's go to hurry up. Let's go to dink and dunk. Let's give these guys a chance to defend for 2 or 3 seconds before Brady gets pounded. Let's go back to the way things were a couple of years ago when this line first went into transition. And then maybe these guys can build up some momentum of their own as a unit.
John, I think you make a point. So I've got two more things to throw in there. I'll tell you two things that I'm going to predict. You may have mentioned it, but I think the center, Stork, will eventually take that job. I'm going to give it to him by game 6. And don't sleep on this guy that they fell in love with, Fleming. If the two tackles continue to be a disaster, don't be shocked if Fleming comes out there, because he looks like he might be able to deal with these quick guys a little bit better.
They like his smarts. They really do.
And then lastly, I'd love your opinion, and I'm going to hang up on Aaron Dobson, where you see him, where you see his development, if you think he was just not a good draft pick, where he was selected. And, again, thanks so much for your time. You do a great show.
Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate the phone call. You know, Dobson is still one of the great enigmas, I think, on this team, full of them. You know, we can see that he's got physical tools. He appears to have physical talents. But he, for whatever reason, doesn't have the full undisclosed or disclosed confidence of the coaching staff and or the quarterback right now. And, you know, the reason he was put on, you know, the inactive this week is because the Patriots line is that, you know, well, we feel like the guys that we have acted are better suited to what we want to try to accomplish in this game, i.e. game plan against the Raiders. I don't think there's a definitive finger to put on it. So, you know what? I'm going to turn this one over to our guest for today. We put this out on Twitter and didn't even get a chance to reset it today because we've been so busy with the phones today. Eric Friends, who covers the AFC East and the Patriots for Boston.com, joins us on Tuesdays here in the Playbook on Nitpick Tuesday, and he's joining us now here today. Hey, Eric, how's it going today?
Going well, John. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for taking the time again today. Let me pose that one to you. What are your thoughts on, you know, this great enigma that Aaron Dobson is, and the Patriots' lack of faith in making him a guy that they can go to game in and game out?
Well, a couple of thoughts here, John. First is that, I mean, obviously Dobson dealt with the foot injury all summer long, didn't get to practice through minicamp, through OTA, and through most of training camp. Finally started to get into the mix there towards the end of training camp. So really, he's 3 months or so behind pretty much everybody else on the roster in terms of his off-season workout program. And then secondly, you mentioned it. You know, you keep hearing the coaching staff going back to this line of, we're going to put the guys active that give us the best chance to succeed at what we want to do for that specific game plan. And I think we're starting to see now where the Patriots are really kind of going to that dink and dunk attack that you were talking about a second ago. And Dobson, I'm not sure he really fits that. I mean, he gets open down the field a lot better than he does in short areas. And I think that's something that, you know, the Patriots, when they drafted Dobson, they were trying to get a little bit more explosive. But so far, Tom Brady's only hit one of 13 throws that traveled 20 yards or more through the air. So the long passing game isn't really working for them. Dobson, that seems to be his biggest strength, and so far, they really haven't wanted to go that direction.
That absolutely is spot on. And I was just going to say, they're having a hard time spreading the ball around anyway, and that has been one of the big chief complaints over the last couple of weeks anyway of Brady and recognition. So if you're having a hard time spreading it around to all these guys, let's go with what you know, and let's take some heat off the offensive line. That's certainly not going to play into a guy like Dobson's hands.
Yeah, you nailed it. And I think the offensive line, look, the issues up front, I think it's been so bad to the point where if they can just correct that, I think a lot of the other problems start to go away. The short passing attack starts to work a little bit better. The running game starts to get a little bit better, which would then in turn kind of help fix some of the problems they've been having on third downs. A lot of these issues that we've been talking about ad nauseum over the past few weeks, they start to get a little bit less noticeable if that offensive line can protect and open up holes in the running game.
All right, Eric, you kind of touched on it right there. That's the hot button topic for a lot of people today, the offensive line. Can you fix it?
Can I fix it?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can fix it. man, they might want to call Dante Skarnecki and see if he can fix it.
See if he's got a little a little left in the career, huh?
Right, exactly. But no, I think there's a couple of issues. I mean, I think the offensive tackle play has been pretty bad. The play on the inside has been worse than that. Nate Solder did not have his best week last week. He gave up, I think, 3 hits and 2 sacks on Brady.
Yeah.
Khalil Mack is a really good pass rusher, so I think we got to give him some credit for just making some plays, being an explosive guy.
He had a great game, I thought, on Sunday, and a lot of people were really killing that pick made by Oakland, but I liked Khalil Mack out at UCLA, and I think that's going to be a good pick for Oakland.
Yeah, it certainly will, and I think another issue that they've had is that the guard play, obviously Marcus Cannon has moved from tackle to guard. And we've been hearing some reports that, you know, the Patriots had their trepidations about moving Cannon from tackle to guard. Now we can kind of start to see why that is. I mean, he's just not really suited for the quick recognition on the inside to make those quick moves and kind of pick up those guys on stunts on the inside. And I think that's kind of been a problem for them as well. I think things got a little bit better towards the end of the game last week when they moved Brian Stork in at center and had Dan Connolly playing right guard.
Yeah.
Things got a little bit better, but I think they still have a bit of a way to go.
All right, so, you know, I think that, and that's one of the things we kind of started getting into a little bit, Eric, was, all right, what's the best way to kind of start fixing these problems? And number one is to kind of quicken the pace on offense and give these guys less of a chance to screw up, really, and maybe give Brady some more time so he can do what he does best. If he's struggling with the 15-plus yard throws downfield, then let's get back to the dink and dunk game, which should, in theory, help the offensive line. But don't you kind of feel like maybe, you know, starting Monday night in Kansas City, and this will certainly be one of the toughest places in the entire league for a rookie to come in and start, but don't you feel like Stork's got to kind of take over that job and take that role on now, because that's what they really wanted him to do anyway until he got hurt in the preseason?
That's going to be a tough assignment against Don Terry Poe. They have a really good nose tackle in Kansas City, and I think he's one of the more underrated interior defenders in the league right now. But also, I mean, obviously Tom Bahaly and Justin Houston off the edge, those are my bigger concerns. I was mentioning obviously the tackle play, and that's been bad for them. And I think guys like Hawley and Houston can really get after the quarterback. So it'll be interesting. I think this could be a week where we start to see some changes. And again, I think some of it too is also, I mean, obviously the injury to Ryan Wendell seems to be the thing that was changing the complexion of the inside of the offensive line. I'm not really sure exactly how serious that is or how much of a factor that was, as opposed to maybe they just wanted to move in another direction. But I do think that if they want to figure things out on the inside, a good place to start would at least be to give Brian Stork a chance.
Yeah, I think it's time, and I agree with you. The matchups don't appear to be good. Even more of a reason to take some of the wind out of their sails and beat them with the quick throws and the quick hits, as opposed to, you know, dropping back in a 7-step drop or what have you. The other issue I think is that, and the PFW guys talked about it earlier today, and I think it's fair to give Tom Brady some of the criticism for the problems on offense because of his inability to either recognize receivers or to get the ball downfield, and maybe it all ties back into the offensive line and the struggles there. But how much of the criticism does he deserve in your estimation?
I think there's enough blame to go around. I definitely do think that he deserves some of the criticism. There were some times where there were open receivers that he just did not hit. There was one play to Rob Gronkowski. They had a play action on a rollout to the left. And, I mean, it looked like Gronkowski might have stutter-stepped, and it wasn't really clear why he did that. But, I mean, Gronkowski was wide open. Brady led him way too far. All he had to do was put it on the numbers, and that would have been a catch, probably a 20-yard gain. There was one to Danny Amendola in the front of the end zone where, I mean, you might call that a drop if you're really a harsh critic. Mm-hmm. I call it just a bad throw. It looked to me initially like a drop, but then once I saw it again immediately, I put that on Brady. And I think, you know, those are some open throws that he missed. And I think, you know, obviously the receivers, you know, they got to catch the ball when it comes to them. And there was one to Vereen where it hit him right in the face mask at the beginning of the game. And I think that's the kind of play that they would like to have back. But definitely Brady deserves his share of the criticism.
All right, let's flip it to the other side. Let's actually talk about something that isn't going all that terrible. This team is second in the AFC in total defense after 3 weeks. This team overall in the NFL after 3 weeks is third defensively behind Detroit and the New York Jets. So that's a good thing, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. One interesting thing, though, I mean, I feel like the defense, you know, yeah, they certainly played well. They didn't give up a touchdown. When I was watching that game, I felt like they were giving up yards left and right. And then when I looked at the box score after, I was pretty surprised at what I saw.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave up less than 300 yards total. I felt like it was going to be over 400 just from how that game went and just watching that game. It felt like they were giving up yards left and right, but buckled down in the red zone, had some good third down stops. And really, I think, you know, that was the biggest positive to take away from it from last week was that they were able to get some stops, but it was against, you know, Derek Carr and a Raiders offense that they were expected to get those stops.
Right.
So, I mean, I look at it, I'm not going to start crowning this the best defense in the NFL just yet. I think they still have a way to go. But I do think that they made some progress, especially considering, you know, juxtaposed to what they did in week one against the Dolphins.
Absolutely. Steps in the right direction. You can't get carried away. You'd still like to see them get off the field a little bit more often on third down. You still want to continue to see improved play in the red zone defensively. Hasn't been awful, so you know, you like the tendencies here. But two things I've noticed. Number one, Derek Carr, first of all, in Oakland, they actually went after Darrell Revis a bit this past Sunday. I don't know if that is just moxie on their part or if they're seeing something that we're not.
Well, there were a couple of plays there where, I mean, one of the completions that Revis gave up was on a comeback route to Streeter down the sideline, and it was on a bootleg by Derek Carr where really all he had to do was throw it straight in front of him, and that's one of the hardest routes to defend. I think there were some of those plays were just really hard routes to defend. Others, I mean, Revis was right in position to make a play and just didn't make the play, and I think, you know, if he starts to, you know, break up some of those passes instead of giving up the completion there, I think it looks a little bit better. I think we kind of held way too high of an expectation of Revis to begin with, that mm-hmm. he was going to shut down half the field, that he wasn't going to give up a completion, that he was going to be the game-changing piece on defense. And, I mean, as good of a player as Revis is, those were pretty impossible expectations to live up to in year one in a brand-new system. And Revis says that he's comfortable in the system, or at least he seems comfortable in the system, but I think there's still a little bit of an unfamiliarity between the two, Revis and Belichick. They're trying to figure each other out and figuring out exactly what's going to work for both sides.
Yeah, and I would also add into that, you know, Logan Ryan being in there this past weekend. Now, you know, it was one of my nitpicks, you know, that it was really being nitpicky because there really wasn't much of a choice there with Alphonso Dennard being inactive before the game. But I think we've seen that Ryan's still got a ways to go before he can become what I would call an every down or at least a three down kind of defensive back. His better role is still more to come in nickel and dime situations, and he was out of position in a couple of plays and played all 60 snaps, but he was hurt a couple of times.
Yeah, I think that's that's obviously not what you want to see from the secondary, but I do think, I mean, obviously, you know, Revis had his moments where he gave up some big catches. I think when you're any cornerback playing opposite Logan Ryan, there's going to be somewhat, or playing opposite Darrell Revis, there's going to be somewhat of a bullseye on your back.
Sure.
And I think that's something that, you know, that Logan Ryan and guys like him and Alphonso Dennard, they're going to have to get used to that they're going to see a lot more balls thrown their way than maybe they did in the past. And so I think it's just one of those things where they got to spend more consistently on the back end.
All right. So is all is lost now after 3 weeks? Are we ready to to reevaluate this being a potential Super Bowl title team? Or is that just a knee-jerk reaction? Again, one of the things we've been talking about today, trying to differentiate between what's a knee-jerk reaction and what's a real problem here.
Well, I think, you know, Belichick always says, you know, it's never as bad as it looks when you lose. It's never as good as it looks when you win. So I'm going to say the answer is somewhere in between. I think, you know, I think right now they are not the dominant Super Bowl winning team that we thought they would look like, at least early in the season, but it's still early in the season. There's still plenty of time for them to get it figured out on both sides of the ball. I mean, they're not going to get any more talented between now and the end of the season, so I think that's something that they have to consider, but they can, you know, figure out what the problems are and kind of work around them. And so I think that's where the coaching staff comes in. And I really wouldn't rather have any other coaching staff doing something like that than the Patriots coaching staff and Bill Belichick.
All right. Played very well, right down the middle, like a good member of the media should.
Thanks a lot, John.
Appreciate that, Eric. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too. Talk to you next Tuesday.
You got it. Thank you. Eric Friends covers the AFC East and the New England Patriots for Boston.com, and he's going to join us here for the foreseeable future on Nick Pick Tuesdays here on Patriots.com radio to give his 2 cents worth on all things worth nitpicking, and maybe the silver linings in the clouds of darkness, so to speak, which he tried to do a little bit there. All right, we have not had a chance to say thank you to our sponsors at all today because you have completely jammed up the phone lines and everything else that we got going on today. So let me do this. Let's take a quick break. The phone lines are still full, so hang on. I'll get right back to your phone calls. I do owe you some emails, and I do owe you some tweets, and I owe you some Facebook posts as well, and we'll get in as many of them as we can on Nit Pick Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99 at a Microsoft store near you.
Didn't like what you saw from the hometown team last Sunday?
Now Vereen motions into the backfield and then flexes back out left slot. Low snap at Brady's feet. Picks it up. Brady's in trouble. He's got to throw it away. Passes toward the end zone. Incomplete with 3 seconds to go.
Killing themselves. You got the ball down inside the nine. You call a timeout. Now it's just... make sure we have the right formation. We need motion. We need misdirection. Quarterback can't handle the exchange. It's a low snap.
I don't think anybody's going to wonder why Tom Brady is irritated right now.
Well, John didn't either.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook. Phone in your nitpicks on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email them to webradio@patriots.com. Now back to the nitwit, Nitpick Master himself, John Rook.
Also find me on Twitter, tweets for a twit, at JR Broadcaster is the Twitter handle, John.Rook on Facebook. All right, let me hit with a couple of Facebook, or a couple of emails here. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut says, nitpicks, one, all the whiners that are saying this team isn't going anywhere, way too early in the season to start that talk. Two, the offensive line. Okay, I think we'll all agree on that one. Three, penalties. Yes, they improved, but still too many. I'm totally with you, Howard. Number four, play calling. McDaniels has seemed to take a step back this year, both in imagination of play design and calling. And five, pressure from the D. Carr was a rookie quarterback. What does a D do to rattle a quarterback? They pressure him. Hopefully the O has a coming out party in Kansas City. Good points, Howard. Luke says, John, my nitpick would be the rotation at running back. I didn't quite understand why Vereen was used in the red zone on straightforward runs, why Ridley was used on successive plays that burned him. Once Wendell comes back, all will come back to normal? Let's be reasonable. What do the Pats do since 2010? They win. They blow out the overhyped opponents. It's a fact. And yet every year, the whiners and some of the media just don't seem to get it. New England will qualify for the Super Bowl. All right, there's someone that's going to stick with the game plan. I don't know that everything comes all the way back to form when Wendell is back. It certainly will help from a depth perspective. We did cover a little bit earlier why Vereen was in the red zone as opposed to Ridley. Let me get one more in here, and then we get back to the phones. Michael says, John, my quick thoughts, I think the Patriots were in the AFC Championship last year. They'll get back there again. If they get the offense going, this team will be monstrous. They have the D to do it. See? I got more people climbing on the D's back now. And if they get the offense going, it'll bring more fire to the D. No question. One more. Hold on. This one comes from Kareem, who says, in all honesty, from my viewpoint, looking at the game and the way our coach designed our team, it's hard to watch. I think our coach is limiting what Brady can do, and I don't believe Brady has any input on players, nothing. Every player has handcuffs on in the press conference, and we're not getting real answers. Well, that's an opinion, yes, but I can't necessarily disagree with you because it's clear to see that I think more would like to be said, and if you come out and you start slamming people, it's not really going to accomplish too much. This is the kind of thing that you do need to kind of take care of, I think, internally, at least try to take care of it internally first. And I'm sure that's what they're trying to do here. And then Chris in Seattle says, my first email of the season, so hello, John. There's a reason we've heard Army captains shouting, hold the line, throughout a century's worth of war film history. In battle situations, it always starts with the line, just as you said. I don't really have anything to add. You got it covered. Well, thank you. I don't have it all covered, but thank you, Chris. He says, how about game plan Wednesday? It doesn't rhyme. It's not alliterative. But I think it gets to the heart of the discussion on Wednesdays. We're transitioning away from the previous game and looking forward to the next one. Excuse me. I just sneezed live on the air. I'm sorry. I don't know why I did.
What a junior broadcaster move. That's why we have cough buttons.
Well, but I don't feel like, you know, splattering myself all over.
I was in the lunchroom for a sec. The bathroom, but coming back through here, and I could hear you from all the way outside. I was
sorry.
Like, I came running in here. I was like, oh, God, this is it. You just had a heart attack live on the air.
No, actually, I'm actually in pretty good shape, brother. But I'm just, you know.
Glad you're here.
Well, thank you. I should have hit the cough button.
There's a couple times when Fred has
that one snuck up on me.
Oh, Fred has hiccuped during eating his lunch during PFW. And he'll be trying to read an email, and he'll hiccup, and his face turns beet red, and Andy and Paul and I look at him thinking, oh, no, this is it. This is the big one.
Oh, my goodness. Really. Who's got the revival skills going here? All right, we'll talk more about potential for Game Plan Wednesday or a show name for tomorrow. Tomorrow, shall we? By the way, Brian says this. Brian in Longview, Texas, I totally agree with you regarding the O-line for the Patriots. If there's constant pressure on Brady or on any quarterback, for that matter, when your offense is going to struggle. Same goes for the running game as well, which is definitely a day and night difference compared to last year, aside that they do not have Blunt anymore. I feel the coaching staff will take a look at the film, make the necessary adjustments for their upcoming game against the Chiefs. It's still early. I know BB is going to turn this around as he normally does. Everything will be right with the world and Patriot Nation soon. All right. Someone who's not prone to knee-jerk reactions. Now back to the phones. Other Dave in Connecticut. Hello, Dave. You're in the playbook. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, John. First-time caller. I love the show.
Thank you.
I started listening to you like 2 weeks ago. I've been listening to PFW for years, but it's definitely an interesting take, very refreshing. A little bit more personal, minus rants and screaming, which is enjoyable. But
thank you.
Sometimes headache, so
okay. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, and Kevin, also Kevin.
Absolutely.
One thing I want to say is, it's kind of a joke, but would you have had, like, if Belichick could, I mean, obviously with, like, collective bargaining agreement, you can't, but have those guys, like, doing laps with a whistle and screaming, again, after that game, like they did a miracle, turn the team around.
Yeah, probably something to that. I don't know that prep or college or, you know, amateur, let's say, and I use that word loosely in a lot of cases, teaching techniques work on the pros because these guys are paid professionals. I'm not sure how much of an instance that has. And you're right. It could also have something to do with the collective bargaining and how much time they're on the field and yada yada. I mean, I don't know because I don't have the contracts in front of me. What I will say though is that if you were a coach, there's something to that. And so maybe that's something that has to be taken care of while you're in practice. I don't know. I mean, I don't have any other answer for it, but clearly these guys are not getting the message. And, you know, it needs to kind of turn around on them soon because, you know, pretty soon you're getting ready to face off against a couple of big heavyweights coming up right now and two teams in the AFC that are probably most mentioned as potential Super Bowl teams outside of Denver and New England in the next 2 weeks. And that's Kansas City and Cincinnati. So here's your competition right here. This is it. It's coming up. You're getting ready to face it. Are you a contender or pretender? That should get your attention.
Yeah, and that was my joke. And my nitpick is I'm going to take a different view from a lot of people, obviously, picking on the O-line and obviously the receivers and everything like that, and Tom. I'm going to actually go with Belichick, a little lacking in the coaching method. Obviously, he's still Bill Belichick, but I mean, like, not going over and, like, taking a knee and talking to the defensive guys, you know, just leaving it a little bit too much to Matt Patricia. And also, like, in the earlier days, I mean, the championship days were completely different, but maybe subbing some guys in if it's not working, like, who knows, like, in on a run on a goal line, bring in Wilfork, bring in a little bit more beast, or, you know, get Devlin, I mentioned this on PFW, put Devlin in on a shotgun situation on, like, a third and five, just to give Brady that extra level of protection and pass blocking, and he's also sneaky, he can slip out, he has good hands. You know, just move some things around. I definitely, like, point a finger at Belichick's coaching method. Stop looking like half the head coaches in the league walking up and down the sidelines. Act more like the head coach that we love.
Who is it you said has good hands and try to sneak him out again?
Devlin.
Oh, James Devlin. Yeah. You know, he's probably as effective a blocker as anybody they have. And that includes those guys on the offensive line right now. I'd love to see them try to, you know, have a guy like that stick his head in there. A little bit more often.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, very underrated. And like I said, just do some different things. You know, if Amendola is not working for whatever reason, they talked about this on PFW, let Tim Wright have an extended exposure. It can't hurt you with the production of the offense. It can't. Shotgun situations, Tim Wright's in the game. On the next drive, Tim Wright's in the game. Keep him in the game.
Well, the problem is that Wright right now may be more of a liability when it comes to blocking, and they need the help there. So that's why you haven't seen him as much as maybe you'd like to see him in there. So, yeah, you know, he's going to have to bring that part of his game up. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, and obviously the point is, you know, he came in late, so getting everything with the, you know, the complex playbook and everything like that, and, you know, being right in the spot where Brady wants him. And yeah, there's another thing, one more quick thing, and then, you know, you guys are backed up and everything. I understand is Brady, early in the championship days, I noticed that he threw to receivers, and for many years, it's almost like now he's throwing to spots.
Mm-hmm.
You will be there in, like, I don't even know how his mind works, in 3.2 seconds or 5 seconds or however long he has versus I'm throwing to the open guy. That guy's wide open, I'm throwing versus, like, I'm throwing to a spot. And you see it from other quarterbacks in the league, too. They aim for spots, like Manning a little bit. You know, unless, no one's pressuring you, you have all day to throw the football. Oh, my favorite receiver is the open one.
Yeah.
But with timing and the defensive guys, the defensive ends being faster than ever before and monster athletes, you have to throw a spot. They got to get rid of the football in like 3 seconds.
Right, but that's an excellent point you bring out. I think you're right. He threw the receivers as opposed to throwing the spots. Now you got to throw to spots. The problem is you don't have savvy enough receivers to be in the exact spot, A, or B, receivers that are getting bumped off those spots. So there's got to be an adjustment somewhere. And frankly, Brady's the guy that has to make that adjustment.
Yeah. And I said that was the last thing, but one more quick thing, and now completely, truthfully get off, is I always tell my fiance, every Patriots game, I believe Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. Peyton Manning, I think there's no comparison. 5 Super Bowl appearances and 3 wins, that tells you that right there. But I think Brady's one of the worst when he's angry. I love when that anger turns to passion. Like, when he blocked on that play, I was, like, jumping up in the air. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
I knew they were going to get points in that drive, and it was critical. They got that field goal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like him when he's angry. He goes to the bench, and, yeah, that he puts his hand on his head, but he's staring around. We're like, Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning will be talking to other guys on the sidelines.
Yeah, Dave, he actually almost got called or could have gotten called for unsportsmanlike conduct late in the game when he took his helmet off in frustration before he got to the sideline. It was possible that if the referees had seen that, he could have been flagged for that. And I agree with you, and I think you're spot on that assessment. That's a good phone call. Here's Kareem in Memphis. Kareem, thanks for hanging in. You're in the playbook.
Hey, John, Kareem in New Jersey. What's up, buddy?
Oh, hey, how's it going, Kareem?
Good, good. How are you?
Good.
I know you took a lot of phone calls. I'll make it short and sweet.
Okay, good.
I had to rewatch the game. I'll tell you what, it's not that bad. I'm not going to lie. I was very angry. I'm always angry.
Right.
Sunday. But Tuesday, I watched the game yesterday again. I was at the gym, and I watched it again. I'll be honest with you, we did very well considering how well the defense of Oakland played, to be honest. I think they did a phenomenal job just to not let us in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's number one. I think we're frustrated because we're not seeing Brady performing that we were used to. We're frustrated because we're comparing the Patriots this year to the last year because
right.
we had nobody and we did better job than this. So I'm like, okay,
right.
so this is it. We have all these weapons this year, so we got to make it. You haven't seen that yet. That's why we're frustrated, okay?
Right.
Nitpicks. Offensive line, I'm not going to repeat myself. It sounds like a broken record. But here's the deal. I think Scar being gone, and then that was a figure in the whole team. It's not just an offensive line coach who just let go,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Leadership. And then Logan Mankins, same, that's two big boys in one spot. I think those who were all the O-line that seeing these two guys gone, they're like, wait a second. We have to start again with a new coach. We have to, we have to deal with Logan Mankins gone. Yes, I know we put everything behind us, but they're humans, man. Believe me, they're affected by it. I can tell you right now.
I'm sure they are. I think it's a good point by
Absolutely.
You.
And I'm not saying that the personnel or actually the O-line right now is sucking, but they need to figure. They're trying to figure out. Okay, giving Brady some more time, I think we're going to see more plays. Now, here's my thing. Where is our running game, man? I think Stephen Ridley. He is so concerned about not fumbling the ball, he has no idea what running is. Okay? He's hugging that ball so hard, he doesn't want to let go. Great. That's awesome. But what are you going to do with it? Every single play, Ridley is on the scrimmage. By the scrimmage, he's down. No gain whatsoever.
So you think Kareem, he's going down early because he's not fighting through tackles because he's afraid of coughing up the ball?
Absolutely. I can guarantee you on that. And that's my opinion, obviously. I'm not a professional or anything. But every time he has the ball in his hand, the first thing he thinks of is not yardage of gain, and he's thinking of, oh, my God, I'm going to lose the ball.
All right, so then,
this way.
All right, let me just play devil's advocate then. All right, so the opposite of that then, or the obvious answer to that would be then, all right, so he's got to play with a little bit more reckless abandon. What then if he leaves the ball on the turf? He's not going to be in there. He won't be in there at all.
I'm going to play another devil's advocate. I don't think Stephen Ridley's the man for the job. I hate to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I love the man. And I think he's phenomenal, a great athlete. But right now he's in a position he's afraid to go to the doghouse again. Okay? That's number one. I think I don't know why. I mean, again, I don't want to get into this, but where's Blunt? Why did we let him go?
Didn't want to pay for him. Commanded too much money for what they thought he was worth. Can't say I argue with that right now, considering the time he's getting.
One last thing,
yep.
Here it is. We talked about this. Thank God our schedule doesn't have anything big for the first 4 weeks, literally. I mean, Kansas City Chiefs, this is our challenge, as you said, okay? But have you seen the game between Manning and Wilson?
I watched it. Like most of America did. Can
you imagine being there last week?
No, I mean the Patriots had been somewhere in that scrum, and there it would have been over early.
Oh, would have looked really bad. Would have been even looking more humiliated than
against either one of those teams
back in Super Bowl. Honestly.
Yeah, one of those teams would have handled them pretty easily, I think.
So I hope the defense keep doing what they're doing. I hope they keep improving, and I just hope to God that the offense just figured it out. I think we have all the weapons, man. And LaFell, I'm sorry, enough with the goddamn freaking penalty. I am done with that penalty. I am done.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's got to understand what the rules of the game are. And if he, and you're probably right, Kareem in Jersey. Thank you very much, Kareem. You're probably right about that. But, they brought him in for a reason because they like his size. And now you got to see him play with more smarts. I think he'll probably still be out there at least initially. Let's get Trey in Memphis in here. Trey, you're in the playbook. Thanks for hanging on, Trey.
Hey, John, how's it going, man?
Good.
Man, there's no doubt in my mind that we have the weapons, man. You got to look at it. We was third in the league in scoring, right, last year?
Yeah.
With some of these same guys, I mean, the only added piece.
But you've only got two offensive linemen back basically from a year ago that are starting in their same spot. So that's one. That's the biggest factor right now. And as I said to start the whole program today, it all starts up front with the line. It all revolves around the line, because if the line isn't blocking, they're not creating holes for your running game, or they're not protecting for your quarterback. And if they're not protecting for your quarterback and your quarterback's having a hard time finding receivers that he has any confidence in to begin with, then he's going to lose his targets, or he's going to throw the ball away, or he's going to throw the ball inaccurately, and it just snowballs, Trey. It just snowballs.
John, I understand what you're saying. I mean, but now we have had guys wide open. Well, I know, some guys brought up, the fact that Gronkowski, he was wide open on the play, and nobody was around Brady.
And Brady missed him. Like, you're right. Brady missed him, and that's on Tom. That is definitely on Tom.
Right, and I think that, we do need to Brady needs to take more than just a little blame. I mean, because, you can't, you got to, one of the main things I'm going to nitpick with Brady, man, he needs to, it seems like Brady has a lot balled up inside, and it's something he really want to say. And I feel like, he and Bill need to sit down and just have a man-to-man talk, man, and be like, look, Bill, hey, let me, let us, kind of take the reins off a little bit. I mean, because to be honest, John, I think the whole team is playing tight. I really do. I think the whole team is on eggshells because, if we say the wrong thing to the media, we're in the doghouse. If we do this on the field, we're in the doghouse. If this doesn't go right, we're in the doghouse. Nobody's having fun, John. It's like they're politicians out there.
That's an excellent point. They are, they do appear to be a little tight. Maybe because, Trey, they have put, but maybe they've also put the same heavy expectations on their shoulders that we all have, and maybe it's just weighing on them.
I mean, it's frustrating, John. To really see it. Because, you look at our schedule, John, this thing is going to get real serious around here, man. And, we're facing a lot of defenses that, man, they got dogs up front, they can hunt. So, if we don't hurry up and fix things, and I disagree with things to be different, if Dante starts next year with you, because you got to look at it. He was the same offensive line coach that was here last year when Brady got the hell stacked out of him all year. Am I right or wrong?
No, this is Coach D. Guglielmo's first year. So Scar wanted
What I'm saying is Dante Scarnecchia was here, and everybody keeps saying that we need him back. Man, Brady got stacked more last year than
That's actually a point that probably hasn't been brought up. And again, I'll give you credit for it, Trey. It's possible. Now, he wanted to retire a couple of years ago, and the Patriots talked him into sticking around. Maybe he kind of knew it was his time. And maybe, this slide started before he was done. And now it's Coach Goog's job to stop the slide. That's entirely possible.
Okay. Well, one last thing, man. I really would like to see all of our receivers activated because I really think that we're going to need all of these guys these next two games, because, man, let's say if Julian Edelman goes down, he's already spending a lot of time in the ice tub. We're going to need weapons available, man, to Brady's expense because, these next games are true tests. All right, gentlemen, I'll give you a call tomorrow, man.
Sounds good, Trey. Here's Olivier in Virginia. Hey, Olivier, how's it going?
John, how are you doing?
Thanks for hanging on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I've been listening to a lot of the callers, and, all of them make fantastic and great points, and so do you. At the end of the day, we're all passionate about this team. We love our team and our players, and it's sad to see where we are, given the hope that we had in the preseason, given what we did last year and the types of addition we made on both sides of the fence, offense and defense, and we were hoping that according to what we've done last year versus what we've added, we could definitely do better. And it's a disappointment. I'm not sure if it's too early for us to conclude where we are and who we are as a team, or we still have a lot of football to play. But one thing is for sure is that I feel bad for Brady. Because at the end of the day, this athlete is the best thing that's happened to this franchise, and he's earned and he fought hard to go where he is. And of course, he's got his flaws and his qualities like everyone else. But once you know that you have this key
component of the puzzle for success. And if you look at what other teams are doing, such as the Broncos, I mean, you know, Brady and Manning have this, are the same age, basically, and they have the, you know, they're fantastic players. And look at what the Broncos have done to surround him with, it appears to be, and I'm not a professional at this, but it appears to be more of a protective offensive line. And again, you know, I feel that we are, you know, we are playing with fire here by not protecting the best asset that we have enough. And sooner or later, Tom is going to get broken. We cannot play with our offensive line tactics with him at his age and his physical condition as we could have 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And if we do that, then we should say, listen, Tom, we want to protect you, but we're going to be playing. Then put Garoppolo in there. He'll take all the hits and he'll learn and so forth.
No, I don't think we really want to go that far, though.
We don't. I agree with you. But, you know, from a youth perspective, you know, I'm disappointed and I know it's not intentional, but, we are wasting such a great talent, and that guy's getting killed. I mean, look at what happened this game. I'm surprised he still stood up and walked the right way. And maybe the reason why he took his helmet off is because maybe he was fuming, but maybe because he was trying to breathe.
Yeah, well, yeah, probably needed to breathe because he was getting ready to get suffocated if he'd stayed under the helmet. I mean, I understand his frustration, and, you know, and he does take, I think, a good amount of time to comport himself, you know, for the post-game press conference, which is, you know, part of his job to do.
I know, but sometimes...
I think fans actually want him to explode a little bit and to call somebody out, but that's really not who Tom Brady is, and he's never been like that, and I don't think we're going to see that. You know, I'd be a little surprised if we did see that. I'm not saying it won't, because if we continue to see some of these struggles, then we might see that before all is said and done. But I think they're going to try to work through things the way that they have always done it in the past. Right now, though, there's just a little more sense of urgency because this team we thought would be better, and we have miscalculated.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more complex than that right now. We thought it would be better on the offensive line. It's not. We thought this team would be better with the receivers. They're not. The one thing that is better so far is defense. And at least they made the adjustment from the week one debacle in Miami to point now where the front seven seems pretty good. And how about this? We haven't mentioned it all day because this is Nitpick Tuesday. How about Dante Hightower? Can we at least give a couple of kudos out to a guy who seemed to be busting his butt, and for a guy that no one thought could cover standing water in a bucket last year, the guy's covering his butt off right now.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think part of the frustration is that we see that we do not necessarily take a lot of points, but we can't score any, and you can't win games if you can't score points, right, and give a break to the defense. Now, in terms of Brady again, I don't know how it works when you are a quarterback and when you're dealing with a coach and a GM when it comes to your own weapons. But, you know, in the business world, you know, I'm responsible for sales, myself, software for a living globally.
Yep, yep.
And if I have to hire someone, I want to make sure that person is going to be working well with me. He will be able, or she will be able to deliver the value proposition of the product.
Mm-hmm.
They will be able to handle themselves well in front of a customer, and ultimately they will be able to sell our product
so we
can generate our revenue and so forth.
Of course.
Now, if you compare this with a quarterback, if I'm Tom Brady, I hope that when they make an offensive decision to sign a wide receiver and so forth, I hope that he's involved in the process and he's able to say, listen, this guy's going to work and this guy's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And is it the case? I hope it is, because if it's not, then, you know, it's kind of forcing someone to work with someone else without knowing that there is a foundation for success to be had in the long term.
Yeah, it's a good point. Good points, Olivier. Hopefully these are all issues that kind of work themselves out if they haven't already.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure. And the good news, again, this is early in the season, and there might actually be opportunities to do some trades or some, I mean, hopefully we can do something maybe to improve our weaknesses.
Right.
If it had happened at the end of the year, it would not have been possible.
Agreed.
I just don't know if it's even going to be something that we might be able to do. And that's kind of, the fear and the disappointment that we have here as Patriots Nation. We love our team. We think they can accomplish great things according to what's been done in the past.
Yeah.
But what's been done in the past,
yeah,
has something to do with what the talent pool that you have to be able to do something.
Right.
And I don't know if we have it or we don't. And that's a big question mark. And we all hope that we can make adjustments. And everyone says, yeah, in the past we've been able to do it, so we trust it.
But ultimately, you can only do so much with coaching if you don't have the talent to be able to coach it up.
And we're getting ready to find out if that talent really does exist. And it's going to be up to those coaches to get out of that talent what they feel they can or what they originally thought they had. Otherwise, then you have to go back to square one and reevaluate your evaluation of said talent. It's an ongoing process. Olivier, thanks so much for calling today.
Thanks for having me. Talk
sure.
to you next week.
You Bye. Got it. Appreciate that. All right, let me end up here with a couple of Facebook posts. One tweet I wanted to pass along from my buddy Strippers, who says, the over or under at 9.5 wins this year for the Patriots now. He tweeted that out at me a little bit earlier today. So now the expectations are down to the point where you're saying the Patriots could, you know, I don't know, go 9-7 or 10-6 based on what you've seen thus far, really? Have the expectations already been lowered that much? Yikes. On Facebook, we got this one from Matei, who said, more importantly, sick and tired of the whiners and faux fans jumping off the bandwagon. We don't want you anyway. Surely we have several problems, but it's nothing unfixable. I think we'll all rather be good at the end of the season than 3 weeks in. Don't be down on your team, because when they're riding high, once again, those wagoner fans will be back. Dustin says, one of my main nitpicks is the way they chose to use Tim Wright. Is there a reason why they don't have a twin tight end set? Partly because he's got to work on his blocking. Blocking is not his forte. He's more of the receiving tight end that they had in the mode of Aaron Hernandez previously. He's got to get up to speed on that. When you see the two tight end sets, that's why, you know, Ho'omanawanui is out there rather usually than Tim Wright. And then John says, Brady gets fired up on the sideline, the world calls him a whiny baby. If he stays quiet, he's got no fire or heart. He can't freaking win. Hard to argue with that one either. Time and a place for everything, I suppose. And there's a time and a place for the Fantasy Football Champs, because they're coming up next. Gang, I appreciate all of the emails, the tweets, the Facebook posts. I'll read all of them before all is said and done today and try to answer as many of them as I can. The phones just took over the show today, and I'm appreciative of that. That's a great job by you. You're passionate. And we all appreciate that here on Patriots.com. We all appreciate that. We know you are. That's why you're the best fans in the world, bar none. Tomorrow on the program, Eric Scalavino from PFW will join us in the first hour to give us the practice and the locker room report. Adam Teicher of ESPN.com, who covers the Kansas City Chiefs, he's going to join us in the playbook tomorrow. And our former protege, now big-timer, Field Yates, ESPN NFL insider, he's going to join us in the playbook tomorrow, and we'll get into more of not only what the Patriots might be able to do to correct the wrongs that we've seen, but also got to talk about the Chiefs. They will be more than just formidable next Monday night at Arrowhead Stadium, loudest stadium, all that stuff, yada, yada. And they just spanked the you-know-what out of Miami. All right, Bill and Anthony coming up next with the Fantasy Football Champs. Stick around. Thanks, Kevin, for the job today. Thank you for listening. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel. Mañana.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.